Blog Talk Radio.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. And this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. And folks, can you believe we are edging on down, moving on down to nearly 10 years now. June 2nd, I don't know if we're going to have any type of get-together or whatever, but dang, that's flown. That last 10 years has flown. They say that as you get older, it's like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it runs out. Well, dang, it has moved here. But anyhow, 10 years already, and I sort of bring that up just because our guest today, I was with him 10 years ago working for 3.5 years up at College Park, and I really enjoyed the time because I don't know if there's been a – you learn very fast on the job, but, boy, I learned that lickety-split speed there on the job because of just so many moving parts, and they just I just am very grateful for the time. But anyhow, American Tennis, and this week we've got Kyle Bailey, Coach Kyle Bailey, and I see he's on the line here. I'll click you on in a second here, Kyle, but I just wanted to say that I probably he is going to be one of the best sources of information for you as a parent, or really if you're coaching high school or if you're coaching young people, there's going to be some great information given today because he's sort of done it all, and I'm going to go through his quick bio here, but and then I'll make sure that he adds a few things there because I want to ask some stuff about how he ended up in tennis. I think he grew up pretty close to Indiana just like I did, just across the river there, and was known more for basketball in Indiana and Kentucky than for tennis. But anyhow, Kyle, after he graduated from college, I think American University, I have to tell me again if I've goofed this up, but I'm going to get him. I don't want to goof this whole thing up, so I'm putting him on the line. Kyle, you're there, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. You graduated American University, right, or University of Maryland?
Correct. Correct.
American, okay. Yeah, and when I first met you, you were an assistant coach at Maryland, and then your journey took you, you became the head coach, you got to work, or the first assistant coach, first of all, at American, and then you became the head coach there, correct?
Yep. Correct.
Right.
Yep.
And then you moved over to College Park where I got to know you, and then you moved on up to New Jersey where you worked in one of the top programs up there at Center Court. But then you were itching to get back into college, so you coached 2 years, 1 year at Montrose State, is that correct?
Just 1 year at Monmouth University.
Monmouth. You guys won the conference, too, in that 1 year.
We did. Yeah,
you put it together pretty quick there. That's awesome. And then of course
guess,
you moved on. you moved down to University of South Carolina, then you and Josh Goffey, what you guys did is really set some records there as you had the first NCAA champion ever, I think, in the whole state of South Carolina, you know, at one of the colleges there. And what was more impressive, and when we get into these stories, but folks, the fellow, Paul, what was Paul's last name again?
Jubb.
Right. So Paul started out number six on your team. He was a little scrawny guy.
Seven,
he probably
seven.
Wouldn't like
yeah.
the same.
Yeah.
And then he ends up.
He wasn't even playing when he first got there. Yeah.
Right. And now, of course, you're at Charlotte University. And real quick, does anybody call it UNC Charlotte anymore? It's just Charlotte, right?
Yeah, I think they're trying to sort of slowly transition into Charlotte, which I think is good. You know, tying ourselves. To
yeah. I think so. That like Louisiana now, that used to be Southwest Louisiana. I think it's University of Louisiana and stuff like that. That makes sense. So, anyhow, did I get your background pretty close, Kyle?
You nailed it.
All right. Okay. Now, you grew up across the river from Evansville, Indiana, right? Where?
You got
talk
it.
About
yeah.
that.
That's right.
Talk about, okay, all right, we're going to, you've got the whole hour, and I want you to speak here primarily, but what we're after, I'll just sort of give you what we're after. I want you to talk about you and how you got into tennis and how you got in coaching, mm-hmm. why you got into coaching. But then very quickly transition to parents and players. I put here, you'd like what I wrote down. I put down, my guess is Kyle Bailey, college tennis, the journey to it and through it. Well, the journey to it, if a youngster wants to play college tennis, the journey today is much different than it was 20 years ago. Just as well, the journey to be successful once they get to college is extremely complex. It's quite helpful to be able to plan a course. Coach Kyle Bailey has coached hundreds of players over the past 20-plus years, but maybe more impressively he's helped over 100, I'm sure, to find their right fit, and probably 200-300 while you're there at College Park. So anyhow, with that, if you could just go ahead and lead off, talk about yourself here, getting into, come on, man, we are in Indiana. I mean, I never had a tennis lesson. I wanted to do basketball, you know, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
too.
Basketball
me
country
too.
Up there.
That's right. Yeah, it was all about basketball. I was a multi-sport athlete growing up. When I was in Kentucky, I took some tennis lessons down at the park there right on the river. But never really, you know, got too into it. My family moved out to Washington State, and we lived right next to a tennis club. And so I used to just walk over to the club and hit on the wall and started getting into the summer camp, things like that. I still played basketball, golf, baseball, pretty much all the way up until I got to high school. And I stuck with basketball up until about 10th grade, and then I started to realize that I wasn't getting any taller, and so tennis may be a better fit for me. So started really focusing on tennis around that time. Got good enough to where I was probably inside, you know, 150 in the country, and got enough to where I was getting recruited by some decent schools, and really liked, you know, American University. I was sort of a small town guy, and I wanted a little different feel. You know, I was looking to kind of get out and spread my wings in a big city and see what that was all about. So, and then when I was at college, honestly, I think the thing that really changed the course, especially my tennis career, was Martin Blackman became the head coach there after my freshman year. And he really kind of where I looked up to and said, okay, he was asking me to really commit at a different level than I ever had to a sport. And
could you just jump in there and tell Martin Blackman's background a little bit? Because a lot of people, I ask people now, Kyle, I said, you know who Rod Laver was? The kids go, huh? What?
Yeah.
You know, they don't know. And the best was I asked them if they knew who Dr. J or Oscar Robertson was. None of them know. It's interesting.
So Martin was, you know, he was a national champion as a junior. He went to Stanford and, you know, was on the teams there with Patrick McEnroe and David Wheaton. I mean, they had one of the best college teams ever there. And then he had a pretty successful pro career. I think he got, you know, right around 100 in the world. And then after he got out of the tour, you know, his father was the ambassador to Barbados. And so he was hanging around the Washington, D.C. area. The job came open, and he went in and took over at American. And after American University, he actually went to College Park and was, you know, the director there for several years. And then he started, after that, he started his stint with the USTA, and obviously now he's the general manager for tennis at the USTA. So, great guy, but just a, you know, fantastic human being, and took a ragtag group of guys at American University and kind of showed us the way, so to speak.
I remember that. I really had a lot of respect for him with his background. That he dove into college coaching there, and you know, he got a firsthand experience of, you know, building and everything like that. So, parents, you know, here's the thing that my good friend Coach Randy Blumendahl yesterday, I think I was talking to him, and he coached 25 years of college, and he's up and down in South Carolina here. Working now, but he brought up, he said, you know, all the kids, without a doubt, and all the parents, they all say, look, their goal in tennis is to be able to play at USC or at Florida or Georgia. They all say this. And he said, Coach, he said, they don't know, they don't realize how hard that is and what the competition is. You know, as far as how hard you have to work, because now it's a whole world that they're competing against. Now, you at College Park, you had the job. Folks, Kyle had the job at College Park. All those kids, they had about 140 kids, I guess, of making the calls to coaches, helping kids sort of be placed, helping kids find their way and everything. So could you just, you know, what I've brought up there, and without telling people how hard – I guess I'll give you the statistic. Holy folks, 1.5 out of every 100 high school athletes, high school tennis players, get to play at a D1 college, 1.5. But that should not deter you. We're not here to deter them, Kyle. We're here to encourage, but to sort of talk about the different options.
Yeah.
Okay, so that could you sort of go in that way?
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah, so, I mean, and actually the best way I can describe it was my experience. You know, I grew up wanting to play very badly at the University of Kentucky, and that was kind of, you know, that was the top of the mountain for me, so to speak, when I was playing junior tennis and coming up, and nothing would have made me happier to do that. However, I think the competitor inside of me realized once I got kind of within the process that that was going to be a lot harder. That, you know, at that time, Coach Emery was there, and they were, you know, top five in the country, and I just sort of saw that was going to be a really tough situation to try to get in the lineup, and I chose to go to a place where I felt like I could really contribute and see myself competing and really taking that next step in the game. I did not feel that I would get that opportunity if I went to a place like Kentucky. So, you know, to be honest, I think it's fine if kids, when they're young, that they have those dreams and they have those ambitions. I would never try to, you know, crush that from somebody.
I agree.
Especially a young child. But I think those kids need to make sure that they have a coach who is experienced and grounded and knows what, like you were saying, Coach, that knows really what those sacrifices are that you're going to have to make, or you know, the level that you have to be at to actually make that dream become a possibility. Because I do think that one of the biggest mistakes I see that people make is that they underestimate that role and how hard it is to go in as a, you know, a player who's going to be 9 or 10 on the roster and trying to work his way into that. I mean, everybody says, oh, well, you know, I really work hard and I'm real hungry. And I tell them, I say, look, that's great. You know, and I think that's awesome. But you know, when you miss that first year or that second year and you're not getting in, and, you know, it just gets hard. It wears on you a little bit. And so I think it's my advice. One of the things I always try to tell people is find a place where you're going to be able to really be an integral part of the team. I think that's, you know, so important for the livelihood of those players to be able to feel like they're contributing and getting to compete.
Those kids at College Park that would come typically about in high school, parents would approach. And first of all, parents, remember this. You sit on the side of the court and you watch the lessons and you see your child
yep.
play, but you don't feel what they feel. And I don't know if there's another sport where people believe, and I'm not running any parents down, but we all think that we know enough about how hard it is, and they really don't. So walk through, like,
yep.
the sophomore year. Do you start trying to help direct kids, freshman, senior? What year, how, and
yeah.
when?
Yeah, I'd say right around the sophomore year is a good starting point. And at that point, I don't think you really need to get into the weeds of it, but I think it's important to start to educate yourself. And really, it's best if the child can start to actually do some of this. And, you know, nowadays, these kids can easily, they're very proficient at, you know, getting on their phones or the internet and just starting to do some research and seeing what schools sort of are, you know, really, really at the top and kind of where they might be fitting in if things kind of take the certain course and just getting kind of caught up on college tennis and what it's all about. I think that's a great thing in the sophomore. Maybe, you know, when you're on some tournaments or something and you're near a university, take an unofficial visit, you know, call the coach up, say, hey, coach, I'm going to be in town for this tournament. We'd love to come by and just take a quick tour of the visit or a tour of the campus. You know, I think that's just in that sophomore year, that's kind of a great starting point. And then, you know, junior year is sort of when that's like kind of the evaluation year, right, where the coaches are actually probably going to start watching you, and these are going to be the big tournaments where you're going to be going to and hopefully getting to colleges looking at you and starting to really start the process. And, I mean, would you like me to, Coach, get into kind of the
sure.
the weeds of
whatever
it?
Whatever you think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the way I used to tell people at College Park was at that point try to, you know, the kid to try to do as much of that process as they possibly can. You know, there's nothing that – to me stands out more is when a kid is the one who is initiating the recruiting process for me. That mm-hmm. shows ownership, that shows that they are competent in communication and they can follow up with things. You know, typically, I mean, as you know, nowadays college tennis, there's so much that goes into it and so many things that these kids have to be able to manage and juggle. So I personally like to see that these kids are able to be responsive and, you know, when I ask them to send me their transcripts or, you know, follow up with this, hey, why don't you send me your tournament schedule? I think these are things that if kids are able to go through that process and get ahead of it and show these things, that it carries a lot of weight. So that would be the first one, is just to get the kid to get ready to take some ownership over the process.
Could I jump in there just a second and say something?
Yeah.
Every day, yeah. and I know this happens with you, every day I get recruiting inquiries, okay, from – first of all, folks, I get inquiries from places overseas that are recruiting service that just blindly
yep.
send me a list of kids with their UTR, and I that's another story about the UTR we'll talk about here in a few minutes. But you get that, and then you get maybe the coach sends you something, or you know it's a blanket email, you know, that they send out or something like that. But let me say this, you parents out there, 100% of the time, if the youngster will write, I know email's easy, if the youngster will write in their own a little more sloppy, a little more crummy way, an email, I'll answer it. If you ever get you really want to get an answer, when was the last time, Kyle, you got a handwritten letter from a youngster? I got one this year.
I got one. Yeah, I think that's about right.
Yeah, and we'll get back to you. But here's the biggest thing: if a youngster will call you on the phone, I always will answer the phone call. I said, boy, that's tough. That was just like calling the prettiest girl in the high school class to go to the prom, wasn't it, Kyle? for that youngster.
100%.
It's so 100%. Hard that you go, whoa, I respect that kid. But parents, listen, a coach can call, but parents do not make that first call yourself. That's the only thing I would say. You know, the parents, try to stay. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's 100% right. And I mean, this is something I actually even work on with our team now, is that, you know, I tell them, obviously, first, especially if something that's important or of magnitude, try to have an in-person conversation. Second is a phone call. And then the last one should be, you know, whether it's a text or an email. So I completely agree that the first, it's going to carry more weight for me if somebody reaches up, picks up the phone, and tries to call me.
Tell them first. The first should be a phone call from the player.
Yeah.
Okay. Second should be a backup with the coach. What'd you say?
Follow up with an email.
Follow up with email. Okay.
Follow up with an email, or if you know, a lot of these kids they get my cell phone number nowadays, so they sometimes will text me, which is fine, but I still, as you said, I think it has more weight if the person is actually calling me and wanting to have a conversation, you know.
Right.
There's just
right.
Text message is more for, hey, coach, you know, great, you know, here's my result. Just want to let you know I had a good win this weekend. Oh, okay, great, congratulations. But you know, that first introductory, I feel like should be a phone call, and they're introducing themselves and talking about themselves and trying. And you know, the other thing I would say is when they do that is, you know, come ready with questions and do some research on your own before you make that call. I think that goes a long way to me as well. You know, I've had it's interesting, I hate to say this, but a lot of times the European kids seem to be, you know, very on point with some of this sometimes, where they will say, oh, you know, I saw you you were at South Carolina, you did this, and then, you know, what are your goals here at Charlotte? I mean, I almost feel like I'm on an interview. I'm like, oh, okay. but I think that shows a lot for kids if they can come that prepared, and that just shows that they're taking some initiative, which I like.
Really very, very good information, very powerful information, you know. So the coaches sort of explain it from the coach's point of view to the parents. You know, there's probably we have a scouting phase, and we don't really get serious about kids unless there's somebody we're really targeting. I don't get serious about kids until after their junior year, and other people do. I've only signed one ever, I think, early, you know.
Yeah, I think that every school is a little different with this, and my strategy coach has, I think, been different at all three universities I've been at, as far as, you know, how I go about that. But I will say that I typically try to be detailed and do my homework and make sure that I establish a relationship with the players. So, yeah, I mean, by the time I think that they're in their senior year, they should try to kind of narrow it down to a few different schools. I think it's important to have, you know, we sort of talked about it, that we were always trying to hit that third, a third, a third with the schools you're looking at. You know, you want to have the school that's sort of the real top end. You want to have I'm swinging in my own weight class here. And then you even need to have some schools that you're talking with that are below. And I think that, you know, most coaches, when they're recruiting, are doing the same thing. You know, we have recruits that we're sort of trying to keep in touch with, and then, you know, we're really working hard to get those top kids, but we know that there's a good chance that they might go elsewhere. And then, you know, you have your kids that, you know, you're sort of right in the middle there. And I think that's something that for kids, they need to make sure that they're just checking that box and that they've got those kind of schools in the mix.
You'd love this one, Kyle. On my blackboard I'm looking at right now, I've got three categories. Okay, you'll love this. Job keepers, difference makers, championship takers. we need to have teams too, and we're always trying to fight it that way. So that's great information. Okay, I want to ask one more thing about from the end of kids looking for colleges. This UTR thing has been like revolutionary. I mean, it's been out there for 10 years. And we, you know the guys, and I know the guys that did it up there, Daryl Cummins, and then Dave Howe, you know, they up there in Virginia Beach, and hats off for those guys doing that. I mean, but here's what I sort of feel like. I feel like the kids now size up too much, the size of the mountain they have to climb based on the UTR. My friend, you know, Coach Andy, you don't know my good friend Andy, who I used to work with at Clemson, do you? I'm not going to give his name. Maybe somebody, I don't want this. This is the best line ever, Kyle. And you folks will get a big kick out of it. But I laugh because the UTR thing, here's the way I think it should work. I think it should work where you can see your own, but you can't see anybody else's, because people are always sizing themselves up. It's important to know the steps you need to take and moving up. But too many times kids see the mountain, they go, ooh, too high. I always say you got to keep fog on top of the mountain till the kids are too high up to turn back. But Coach Andy, you know, he's been in tennis 45 years, and he goes, Chuck, my son's playing tennis, and he was talking about his UTR. And I tried to explain it to him, Kyle. I said, well, it's sort of ranking, da-da-da-da. He goes, I don't know about that. He says, you know, UTR, I think I had one of those one time, but I put a little cream on it and went away. So anyhow, that's no disrespect. Universal tennis rating. Yeah. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, look, I agree with you. I think it's good. It has a lot of value. You know, we use this here as just sort of a baseline of just trying to get an idea of it sort of just takes out some steps in the recruiting process for me, and I think for a lot of coaches, frankly, where, you know, you don't have to go dig as much. It's a place where you can go and, you know, check results of from all over the world, right? So it's a nice kind of one-stop shop with that. However, I think that's kind of where it stops for us. And, you know, it's not like I'm sitting here thinking, oh, well, I'm going to sign this guy because he's a 12-5, but, you know, the guy who's the 12-2, no, he's just not good enough. I mean, it really isn't, I think, but it does give you a bit of a baseline, because it'll tell you, you know, it shows the wins and losses. But I do think that you're right, Coach, that it is, can be, and I have started to see that same thing where kids are, they're very concerned with the UTR, and also they're kind of protecting it a little bit, even if they get, you know, if their UTR kind of goes up, then they're hesitant to go out and play because they're worried the UTR is going to go down. And it's almost come back where people have started to try to manipulate the system, just like they were doing with the rankings.
Yeah.
Not the rankings. Point. You know, I don't think that's the point. I think it was a level based thing where we were supposed to try to figure out, you know, okay, this is showing me what the road is ahead. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, you just got to, you know, focus on trying to get better and Be aware that if you do that, your UTR is going to go up.
Yeah, when I was over in Southeast Asia, we did this thing we were putting it together for all the Thai area there, where we were going to rank the top 40 kids, so you knew who the top 40 were, and then we were going to do a rating system. We're going to do a star system. That's been about 12, 13 years ago, where we would do like from 41 to 450 or so, just the stars, you know, or something like that, a rating system. So kids would know, hey, I'm a 3-star, not a 4-star. And then after that, we were going to use the GRIPS program, which I thought was brilliant. And those guys, dang, I can't think of the two guys' names that put that together out in California. I'm just I apologize to both you guys. I know you well, but I didn't. They put that together. I thought that was really sort of brilliant, because they used like karate belt, you know, went from a white grip to a green grip to the top grip they went to. But kids could work on that, Kyle, with their parents or something like that, with their teaching pro. And then they would go to a rating system, and then a ranking system I think is critical for our top. We need to still know who our top 40 or 50 kids are in the country, I think. But we overdid it when we had 450 kids ranked, and this is not a slap on people, but they would say, hey, coach, I was 450, and I moved up to 386. And you go, okay, well, that, you know, that's you're not what you should be doing. So anyhow, we probably need to, they need to think through that, I guess, a little bit more. Real quick, Kyle. With all that in recruiting, we're getting into recruiting now in the college part. So you've seen it at different levels, American University, then there up in New Jersey. What was the name of the college? I'm sorry. Monmouth. Monmouth. My apologies. And then at the University of South Carolina, I mean, you were going against everybody, and you had an NCAA champion.
Yeah.
Could you talk about the process of what you had to do as a coach in your thinking? I mean, the College Park prepared you pretty much, and University of Maryland as an assistant, you'd been around enough top players, and you, but you just went in there with Josh Goffey, and you guys did a tremendous job, and they're really moving too. And by the way, folks, watch Charlotte. I mean, your team, we'll let you talk here in a minute about it, but you can throw that in there too. But holy cow, what a job you've done. You picked up some great, great American players here this last year. You know, and you're really doing a job there in a state that's loaded with a lot of talent, too. And you've got a state university. So, holy cow, you're moving quickly. So,
well, thanks, Coach.
Jump in there.
It's, you know, and to be honest, I think the thing that really changed the way I recruited was actually the time that that we had together at College Park when I got to take a step back from the college world and actually doing the junior development and seeing how those kids developed, and which, and I actually got to see the ones during that time that actually did really well in college or, you know, went on to had good pro careers. And then the ones that, that sort of, you know, didn't quite make it and kind
well,
of fizzled out.
Four or five of them made top 100. You had Francis Tiafoe there. You had Dennis Kudla. Of course, the great Mitchell Frank was on a program a couple of weeks ago. And all those. But, that would be great if you could talk about why some of those kids made it and why some of them did not. You know.
Yeah, I think. You know, and it's so, again, it's one of the things that I think now I really try to look for. But, you know, I don't know what you think, Coach, but I've tried to think about this a lot with Francis and Dennis and Mitchell. And there are a couple of things that really stood out for me with those. And I would even say that Paul Jubb sort of had this as well. And it, to me, it was first and foremost just a real deep love of the game. And, you know, they were – really wanting to get the most out of their tennis, and they really enjoyed it, and they were fine to spend hours and love to compete, and they were in it, you know, just they seemed like they had a real joy and pleasure playing tennis. So I'd say that was probably the first thing I thought about those kids. And then the second was they had an ownership of their game, and because, you know, I mean, Francis, I love Francis to death, but when he was a junior, you know, I wouldn't say he was probably – as hard of a worker as a guy like a Mitchell Frank, but he owned it. And, you know, he watched a lot of tennis and he learned in his own way, and his desire to want to be a high level player was real. And when it came down to it, I think he really took ownership of that. You know, I mean, think about how many guys tried to change his forehand, right? And all along the way, he said, no, you know, like, this is working for me. I'm doing this. This is my thing. And, so I would say those are two of the biggest things that I've learned from there, and I really try to look for that within the kids that I and you know, just the ones that have that deep need to want to be successful at tennis, and you know, just within their lives, I think that's a big one. And it's not a there's a big difference between somebody who, you know, it sounds nice to be good at tennis, and there's the kid that you can just see that they. There's an inner need inside of them to achieve and to really want to be really good. So, you know, because I think especially for me. I mean, I'm not, it's the same as it was when I was in South Carolina. I've never been at a place yet that where I was, you know, just getting these like blue chip guys that were ready-made pros. So I'm in the business of development and really having to find the kids that are going to want to do that. So that's sort of been a big focus for us, I think, after coming out of that.
Well, listen, you'd love this one. Yeah, and you, we've worked together before, so you understand the way my mind works. I just made a great poster I'm going to put up on the wall. Champions have, number one, great love of the game. Number two, they have take ownership, and then they have a deep need, you know, a deep need.
Yep.
You know, to achieve.
Yep.
And it's, you know, and, you know, and Kyle, that's just about where, whatever we do, you know, and I just think that, you know, in those words, you know, people can coin them, you name it, claim it, you tame it, but the bottom line is it's universal. That's universal for,
yep.
That is just great. Yep. But I just made myself a poster. You know, so I'm sitting here writing notes at the same time. So, when you went to University of South Carolina, you guys built, go through the development of the Paul.
Yeah.
You know, because he was, remember we got to play you guys a couple times, and he was down at 6. I think my guy had a real close first set with him, like a 7-5 set or something.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
So
I mean, like I said, and I've actually got a funny recruiting story for you. So, you know, when I came in there, you know, Josh said, look, man, like one of the things I want you to really focus on is the recruiting aspect. And I had been out of the recruiting game for the most part for about 8 years, you know, from when I was at College Park. And then I jumped into it and got into it at the SEC level. And was I, you know, thrown back at how hard these guys were getting after it on the recruiting front, just the level and the amount of time that it was going to take for us to get competitive with that. And so anyway, we were really pushing at that point to try to bring in some top talent. And we were recruiting Borna Gojo, who was another, top player that won the NCAA, and a few other guys. And we actually struck out on, I think, 3 different guys. One guy went pro, another guy went to TCU, and Paul was our 4th guy. And I specifically remember there was a period where Josh and I were thinking, you know, I'm not sure if this guy's going to be what we're looking for. And he sent me a video probably right before we signed him, and it looked very different than the one that we were looking at previously. So I said, Josh, I think we're going to be all right here. This kid is, you know, you could tell he's making moves with his game. And so, but it's funny. I mean, Josh and I still say it. When we signed him, I said, I guess, you know, this is sort of the fallback plan. And so we got Paul Jeffries. But I'll tell you, I mean, it's funny how that works, that, you know, there was no part of it where we said, okay, this is, you know, this guy's absolutely gonna be the next thing. But I mean, you could tell when he first came in, I mean, I would say his development, one of the things that I've tried to do even now with players when they come in is, you know, we started him off very slow, and we wanted him to win and learn how to really master each level as he came up. And I think that was a really important one, because I see a lot of these kids, they come in and they want to play real high right off the bat and just, you know, kind of go out and play loose and all this kind of stuff. And that can go wrong, as you've seen before, where a guy goes up too high too quick, and then he starts taking a lot of losses. And then everything after that sort of becomes like a disappointment, right? Like he's a failure. Well, now I'm playing 4 and, you know, I was at 1 and this kind of stuff. And so anyway, I think that was something that was really good for Paul. He really mastered and I mean, had a very successful rate at those lower parts of the lineup and just slowly kind of kept working himself up. And honestly,
parents,
go ahead.
I'm sorry to jump in there, but parents, listen to what Coach just said. There are no bad wins in tennis. And I always thought, listen, I went through the same thing. I always said, unless you're winning 75% of your matches at the level you're playing over your head. And you know, it's all right for exposure, But yeah. we all have to do that. I mean, in my scheduling, I put for my bosses, I put in there, can't win, could win, should win, going to win, four different levels. And parents, you should do the same for your youngsters, you know. My daughter right now, she's got a really good-looking tennis game as an eighth grader. But basically, I'm bleeding her into competition very slowly, making sure she does high school. She played down the line on her high school teams, and I was very happy that she did to get the reps, like you said. So talk to parents real quick there, 3 or 4 minutes, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge, especially for somebody. If you're really trying to achieve and you want to keep getting better, I think it's important that, you know, like anything, you don't skip steps. You don't move up to something that you're not ready for. And I just think, especially when kids are young, or, even when you're young, when you first go to college, Paul was a winner before he came to college, but I think he knew just as well as we did that it was going to take him time to latch on to that college level. So, yeah, it was, and I think really, to his credit, he was one of those guys, just like, some of the people we've coached in the past, Mitchell Frank, he was somebody that you put something in front of him and he worked very hard to try to tackle it and take it down. And honestly, that was his best asset, was just his drive as a person. I mean, yes, he was he was a pretty good athlete, but I would not say that, he was, especially in college, that he was one of the best ball strikers in the country or anything like that. He had a good foundation under him, but man, was his drive and his will to, want to become great was very strong. And I think that's honestly what separated him from the rest of the players on our team and also the guys in the country.
Well, there's no magic dust. And folks, listen, there is no magic dust to this. What Coach is saying is exactly right. Recruiting today, parents, Kyle, so there's D1, D2, D3, NAI, and junior college. Any information to the parents out there about those real quick here?
Sure. So, I mean, obviously in Division I, we have 4.5 scholarships for the teams that are fully funded. And I think that I don't know exactly how many of those there are in the country. What would you say, Coach? Probably maybe 100 to 125 programs.
I think that's about college. Correct. Yeah.
And then I would say there's probably another, 100 programs after that. Then you've got Division II, which they can offer athletic scholarships as well, but they're but typically the resources are not quite as vast as it is in Division I. But they also have I don't want to say weakened, but the rules are not quite as stringent as Division I. And then obviously Division III, no athletic scholarship, but you can receive financial or academic. It's interesting. I have seen some people that have gone to Division I and it wasn't cut out for them and gone and played D3 and had a great experience. And I would highly encourage people to look into that, especially if you're kind of one of those players that is on the cusp or on the lower end of trying to play a Division I team. I mean, if I was looking at my son or daughter and they were considering playing for, a real low-end Division I team or one of the top contenders in Division III, I would absolutely want them to try to play at a high-end Division III school, because I feel like the morale of the team is better and they are – a team that is trying to compete for a championship, probably going to be a better experience.
I agree. It's remained a very, very pure form. And then of tennis, NAIA and junior colleges. Wow. Let me jump in there. We used to have a great, great system of junior colleges. It was a great alternative to go to a junior college a couple years if you couldn't afford it. And then you could be recruited out of junior college. It was a great middle platform for kids to go to and make a jump. And there's not as many out there. We have a very good program here, University of South Carolina, in Sumter, USCS, does a great job.
Yep.
There's several, I think, Tyler, was
Tyler, I think Georgia Gwinnett is obviously the one that's been winning a lot.
Georgia Gwinnett is that's NAIA. They're NAIA. They've been winning NAIA. NAIA is pretty much the rules are so different and skewed. I don't think they have rules on they're not controlled by the eligibility and all that. It's much different than NCAA, and stuff like that. So. You've given great information, about the about that. And parents, Kyle Bailey's at Charlotte University there, and just look on the internet and get his number if you have questions, because what a great wealth of information, and I've never known you not to help somebody. So anyhow, we've got about 14 minutes here. I'd like for you to talk about your program and what your journey is.
Okay.
And what you're trying to do, and then anything you want to throw in there, because I mean, it's all great stuff, but it helps parents, players, coaches out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the one last thing before we dive into Charlotte that I would say that I've noticed, especially over the last few years that I'm seeing particularly with the American players, that I think, if I'm going through it with, and I was to advise somebody who's about to go through the recruiting process to start to focus more attention to the competitive skills and the development of your, identity as a player and as a competitor, and starting to really dive into that. That's something that I think I've been seeing recently. A lot of the kids that we are getting are very good with their physical skills, probably better than I've ever seen with that. But they're behind a little bit with a lot of the competitive thing. And, I think that seems to be a big change for a lot of them. Whenever they get to college, they enter into a much more competitive environment than what they're used to. You and I can talk, in a whole nother conversation about what the reasons for that are, Coach, but I think that's something that if I was advising somebody right now to prepare them for this and to be successful, it would be to, I think it's somewhere around 14 or 15, you've really got to start to put some time into that and, less focus on these technical and physical skills. Because once you get to this level, we're in this thing to try to win, and that's what they got to start understanding. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would just be one thing to find.
I'd add 90 seconds there. Each week, there's very few times I ever don't mention some of the reasons why. Parents out there, listen. We both recruit players from USA that might not play a third set the whole year and complain. I'm just telling you, reach out to the tournament director and say, do not play this silly tiebreaker for the third set. The kids don't know how to fight to the end. They're not set up for fighting. They're set up to just and the reason why is when they win, it doesn't really feel like a great win, like a 7-5 in the third win. It's like kissing old Aunt Sally. It's not really a win. And then it's not really a kiss. It's not really a win when you win an abbreviated match. And then when you lose, the bigger thing is your youngster doesn't hurt bad enough. And that's something we'd have to have a long discussion about. But the pain is really important to advance forward. Kids do not advance forward until they dislike losing enough, parents. And so complain to the USDA. USDA, come on. Dang it. I always get on you guys. And we don't address people, but we address organizations here. And we are... It's awful, and Kyle's, we don't have time to talk probably about the international players. Everybody always asks why we have 80% of our players are internationals. Well, the coaches who coach internationals, they will defend it by saying, well, the kids are better competitors. Well, they might have a point there, but go ahead.
I wouldn't say that they're better competitors. I think that I don't know that I've found that to be true yet. I mean, on our end, I still have trouble, you know, really getting those top players that I would need for the top of the lineup. But I have, you know, we were able to get a player like Coy Simon and Thomas Brown in here, and I think those guys are
great.
They're fantastic competitors. Yeah, they're great. And I really think that, you know, me personally, I still try to recruit American players first and foremost. They seem to have a better understanding of the college experience, and they really are the guys that are sort of the gatekeepers for your culture. So that's something
Coach, you just threw a diamond out there. The gatekeepers for your culture. All right.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Team leaders.
Those are,
the gatekeeper?
That's right. Tom Brady, Derek Jeter, you name it. The guys that are, you know, going to protect and really have passion about what it is that you're doing. And, you know, my assistant here, I mean, I can throw out a couple other examples, but there's, you know, there's been several programs over the years. I mean, I think that there was a boy from Tulsa named Zeke Clark who's at Illinois that we talk about here because my assistant's from Illinois. And, you know, there's just so many guys out there. But those guys are really key, I think, for college tennis because it is obviously an individual sport. But the teams that I found that are very successful, the ones that have that, those players that are really going to, you know, I mean, hell, Mitchell Frank was that guy, right, at University of Virginia. So, yeah, those are
right, right.
Guys.
So, you know, I probably need to clarify. I don't mean that they are better competitors, but I do mean that that is a reason that comes out often. And, you know, that's a reason that comes out. And also it's easier on the Internet to recruit international players. Parents, it's very easy now. So that's more reason why a lot of coaches would rather have a American player. But you've got to sell it. You've got to sell it. Why? And are you a gatekeeper?
Yep.
I just made another sign for our wall.
are you a gatekeeper for
our team? Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Gatekeepers. I mean, the other thing I would encourage people to do is, you know, nowadays when you come on, you know, official visits or unofficial, you know, the NCAA has loosened the rules as far as, you know, you getting out there and being able to hit on your own with some of the guys on the team. I mean, that's a great way for you to just, you know, go out there and say, hey, I'd love to come by and visit your campus. And if there's any way when I'm in town, you could set me up with one of your players. I mean, come on. You get to go to the school and practice and kind of show your stuff to one of the players, especially like you said, for some of these coaches that might not have the resources to go out and see you play at your tournaments and things like that. That's a great way to go in there and get some exposure and show them what you got. Show that maybe that UTR thing isn't all that it's. There's something else in there.
Well, absolutely. So, anyhow, building your program there at Charlotte University. You've got a great city. You've got a great part of the country. You're very close for scheduling. You can get teams that are coming down south. Plus, you can everybody who's a big school will play you because you know you can schedule there. You're in a good conference, so you know, and the university is becoming very well established. It's really everybody's recognizing with the football and the basketball for year to 49. Are y'all still the 49ers?
We are. That's right.
Right. So for years,
I mean, you hit it. Yeah.
Cornbread Maxwell Cornbread Maxwell
yeah.
played it. Yeah, he was there. He was. He played for the Celtics, I think, with Larry Bird and those guys. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, you hit it on the head. I when I first came to Charlotte, you know, when I was at South Carolina, I was not looking for a head coaching position. But Charlotte wasn't necessarily one of the schools that was top on my list. But I came here, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I came on an interview, and it was as soon as I stepped on the campus, I said, wow, there's something going on here. And I also like you just said. I mean, I did some research on the city and found out the growth that was happening there, the growth that was going on within the athletic department, the AD, I met with him, and there's just a lot of really good momentum and energy going on here, and I think it's an exciting time to be at Charlotte. We're starting to get some great recruits. Facility is great. We're in the heart of campus here. Honestly, Coach, it's been a great transition going from South Carolina. I couldn't be happier.
Are you happy? Listen, you were sort of this is the work you've been called to do. Do you believe that? I mean, you've really advanced.
I mean, it feels
really
like
well.
It was kind of at the right place. It feels like I was at the right place at the right time. I mean, my parents and my sister now both live here in the Carolinas, and we just love it here. And it's a really good department and place to work for, where I think the people really are doing it. They're trying to win and really could be competitive, but also while doing it the right way. And they want it to be where the kids are focused on, you know, being really good at obviously schoolwork, playing with integrity. And so, I mean, it just was a really good fit. It's one of those things, like with recruiting, when kids come on campus, you just kind of know when you get there, you're like, this is what I was looking for. That's how it works. And
that's really good. Quick here. If you're a youngster, this is about the believing in the magic of your dreams. You made a statement earlier that you said it's very important to keep very high, lofty dreams, and then go after them. And I really think with so much information out there, sometimes kids don't chase down excellence. They think, too hard. You know, it's important to not know how hard that is. Don't you believe that reality will kick in time enough, but earlier you have to keep your dreams big? Or talk about that briefly in the few minutes we have.
No, for sure. I think that's really important. And you know, I go back to some of those days that we had at College Park, you know, when the parents started focusing a little bit too early, I felt, on, you know, oh, the technique has to be perfect, or, you know, they're not ranked inside this or that. And, you know, man, I look back on that now and I just think it's kind of silly, you know. It's like, man, but, you know, like those kids just needed to be out there having fun, enjoying competition. They don't need to know about that stuff at that time.
Right. I've always said that, you know, people try to program a particular pathway. This is the pathway. I say, no. It's a freeway. It's a highway. It's a, you know, completely 1,000 people going after it a different way, but all chasing down excellence. I've got this old book from 1968 from Harry Hopman, and the whole first two pages are about 1,000 players have 1,000 different ways to be a champion, but you have to develop your best style. And I'll give you the last words here before we sign off there. You know, just anything on, you know, keeping the goals, going after the goals, and, you know, encouragement for American kids out here.
Yeah, well, I mean, first I just want to thank you. It's always a pleasure, Coach. You've been a mentor to me forever, and I think that would be my thing is you know, find somebody out there, find several people out there that you can look up to, be mentors. Like I said, I've been lucky enough to have people like, you know, my father and Martin Blackman and you, Coach. And I mean, these are the people that have all you and these other people are the people that have inspired me. And
Josh, don't forget Josh
that.
Now. I mean,
absolutely, Josh Godfrey. We were Josh always said it, you know, we were yin and yang. We were a great team together, and I mean, for him to give me
Vesa Ponka. Oh my, what a wonderful leader.
What a great coach. Yes, what a great coach. I mean, I think that has been my path and my reason, I think, honestly, why I am where I am, is because I've been fortunate enough to be around people that I could learn from and and see what this is all about, because, you know, I really didn't know. I wasn't around, you know, those kind of people when I was growing up. So I think that's
big you know, thing. Kyle, you know, I can, you're at the perfect age, perfect place. You've got your family, you know, doing, and I know you're doing it the right way. And I know you're doing it through hard work, and I've met very few people in my lives that have a great balance of the creativity plus the detail work that you take care of. And you know, and all I can say is just thank you very, very much for being on the program, and we'll do it again soon. And folks, I would try to figure out what's going on down there at, in Charlotte. And thank Kyle for being on, okay? But we got to go.
Thank you.
We got to go.
Thank you, Coach.
Come.